Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to the PW Torch Livecast. I am Wade Keller, editor and publisher of the Pro Wrestling Torch weekly newsletter, published since 1987, and also PWTorch.com, the website, and MMATorch.com, the website, covering the world of pro wrestling and mixed martial arts. You can also download our free apps, which have parallel content to our website. They sync up the news and commentary and articles and live TV results, live pay-per-view results, live event results, and so much more. You can download our free app in the app stores on Android and iOS devices such as iPhones and Galaxy Notes and Galaxy S7s and all that good stuff and Google Nexuses. We're on all of them. Just search in the app store for PW Torch and MMA Torch to download our free apps and keep up with one click on what's going on in the world of pro wrestling and mixed martial arts. Got a big month in MMA coming up next month with UFC 200. Huge news right now over at MMATorch.com on the pending sale of UFC. Dana White about to, in one fell swoop, be worth, roughly $500 million because he owns not all of UFC, a little under 10% of UFC. And he's going to end up netting about $500 million on this. Well, I don't know if, I don't feel net that much. There'll be some people involved in the process, attorneys and that kind of thing. But, man, this is huge, and it can completely change the face of MMA. There's a lot to dig into on that front. I'll be talking with Todd Martin, Torch VIP audio analyst, about this story on tomorrow's The Fix with Todd Martin, one of the flagship shows of a PW Torch VIP membership every week for a couple hours. Give or take, Todd and I sit down and talk about the current issues, not just in pro wrestling, but also get his expert view on mixed martial arts. But first, business today is talking about last night's Raw, Money in the Bank, world title change. You can talk to us about the AJ Styles interview with Steve Austin last night. I heard some of it, not all of it yet. And everything else going on in wrestling. So give us a call. We are starting an hour early than normally we do on Tuesdays. It is just past noon Eastern as opposed to 1 Eastern today. So we definitely are looking for caller support. The shift to 1 hour earlier, a little bit short notice. So if you are listening and willing to participate in the show, we'd love to hear from you, either regulars and especially first-time callers who, for whatever reason, haven't been able to join us in the past. We'd love to hear your thoughts on where things are going for Battleground with everything that was. It is my pleasure to introduce today's co-host, Jim Valley, formerly of Total Chaos Radio and now host of Saturday Morning Wrestling, the Saturday version of the PW Torch livecast, looking at pro wrestling's history, doing a nostalgia-based show, and also host of the VIP Wayback Playback show, where he and Pat McNeil break down in real time. They sync up their show to a program on WWE Network, usually a pay-per-view, sometimes a SmackDown. And they run down that show in real time with historical perspective, quips, analysis, thoughts on why things happened the way they happened, where things went from there, behind-the-scenes notes you might not have known about. It's like hanging out with two friends who know their stuff more than your two know-it-all friends do. And you get to learn and have fun. It's a cool part of the VIP experience. Jim Valley, welcome back to the livecast.
Thank you, Wade. I just want to mention to people that according to the vote on Twitter, it looks like the next topic for the Wayback Playback is going to be the King of the Ring 1996, a historical night, maybe the pinnacle night in the career of your friend and the guy you're frequent on his podcast, Stone Cold Steve Austin.
That is fantastic. That is a pivotal event in the course of wrestling history, and I look forward to hearing that one, Jim. So much to talk about today with everything that happened the last 48 hours, especially. Sunday night, Todd Martin, Bruce Mitchell, Pat McNeil, and I did a VIP roundtable for nearly an hour and a half after the Money in the Bank pay-per-view, and we were shocked and had a very various range of opinions on different aspects of the show. We agreed it was a good show, maybe a very good show, almost excellent show, was three standout matches especially. But the big topic for the first half hour nearly of the show was Roman Reigns losing the title, and what did that mean? Jim, I want to ask you right at the outset here as we get into pro wrestling current events talk. Did Raw change your mind on what Roman Reigns losing the title, Seth losing the title, and Ambrose walking out with the title, did last night change your mind as far as what that means to the big picture and Vince McMahon's attitude about those three wrestlers right now?
No, it didn't. I know a lot of people have been asking, you know, does this mean that the Roman Reigns push or Roman Reigns experiment is over for right now? And I haven't seen an indication for that. And I honestly don't think we're going to know until SummerSlam. I see this as with the whole Shield, everybody winning the world title and Dean Ambrose being the current world heavyweight champion as the beginning of the build towards SummerSlam. So I think it's going to be at least, at earliest, it's going to be Battleground before we get an indication. But I think we're going to see some other three-way or some other match with the Shield at SummerSlam. I think this is part of the build toward that. I will say this, we are living in an interesting time. You know, I think when the Shield broke up, everyone was predicting who was going to rise and who was going to fall. And now here we are, what, 2 years later, something like that. And all three have had a good career. I think a lot of people expected Dean Ambrose to fall by the wayside with some of the booking that we've seen. And here he is as the world heavyweight champion. And not only the booking, but I mean, his body type is not what historically Vince McMahon likes. You know, with AJ Styles in the mix and being a top guy and getting to use his name and his history. This is just an extraordinary time as far as Vince McMahon throwing out his usual biases, just throwing them out to the wind and going in new directions and doing new things. This is just a time unlike I think I've ever seen in the WWE.
It's funny because last night on the Stone Cold podcast with AJ Styles, they're talking about the size issue with AJ, and Steve said, you know, Steve's taller than AJ by, you know, a handful of inches. But Steve said in 95, 96, when he arrived in WWE, he actually felt like AJ does now, in that he was in a land of giants and he wasn't a giant. You know, right around 6 feet, you know, 6'1", 6'2", you know, something like that with Steve. And there were mostly large guys getting pushes, big guys taller than him getting pushes. And same with AJ. So he was saying, you know, kind of knows how he feels and that you had to prove yourself to Vince. AJ certainly has done it. I mean, I have to congratulate AJ on a run of great matches. The Jericho match was very good, but man, I really think he's come through against Roman Reigns and John Cena at even higher levels in these showcase environments. It's interesting because I've talked to some wrestlers and certainly gotten some feedback from people on email and Twitter that I gave great, great praise to Cena AJ. It's one of my favorite matches of the year, easily. I watched on a laptop and was typing up my report on the right side of the screen while watching the pay-per-view on the left. I like doing that because I'm actually able to type while keeping a closer eye on the show than I used to when I would have to type on a laptop, but also then look over at a TV screen. And I sort of have to admit I was watching the NBA game or keeping an eye on it in the background, you know, just kind of see what's going on. And I don't think I got great audio doing that because people are saying, Jim, and I'm wondering if you picked up on it, that John Cena was at his worst in terms of calling spots out loud in a way that the mic picked up. And that made me feel bad because I noticed a couple instances of it, didn't think a lot of it, but I've had enough people bring that up to me since Sunday that I actually want to go back and I've actually watched that match almost twice through, but both times on the laptop. I want to watch it through on a good sound system and see how much of that I pick up on. First, your thoughts on either, well, both aspects in either order, the calling of the match by Cena and that was audible. And if you noticed, if so, did that take away from however you felt about the match?
No, it didn't take anything away, but yeah, it can be a little disconcerting. You know, the match was so strong that you know, I was able to be brought back into it. I guess, you know, sort of like his awkward moves or whatever, I guess I'm kind of used to it because it's been happening with such frequency lately. I don't know what that means about me as a wrestling fan, but I've just come to accept it from John Cena, so it's just kind of part of the package, just like the jorts or what have you. It's just there.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I AJ has just been, I mean, it sounds so, you know, cliche-ish and trite to say it, but he's been phenomenal. I mean, it is, there's a reason that's his nickname. It's not because his name is Phil Frankfurter. You know, it's like, it's not an alliteration. He's phenomenal, not because it goes well with AJ Styles, but because that's who he really is. You know, it's like Glenn might not be glamorous, but they call him Glamorous Glenn because it's an alliteration. With AJ, they called him phenomenal because he's freaking phenomenal in the ring. I'm really proud of him because I know how hard he worked for a very long time. I thought it was fascinating at the top of the Stone Cold podcast last night, AJ talking about maybe feeling too comfortable at first when he got in the locker room, and Austin saying, yeah, you know, you can't get complacent in this business. As soon as you are, people start passing you by, fans notice. So AJ is just, you know, a super, super nice guy. And the stories he's telling about his dad, you know, it was a little bit of an Adrian Peterson type situation, not with pulling out necessarily whipping him, but saying he took spankings too far and drank too much and that kind of thing. I mean, getting real personal too. And so I, from what I've seen of that, I recommend people check it out. I know one of my favorite live casts in the past years has been when AJ was on the show right after he left TNA. That is highlighted at pwtorchlivecast.com as a best of live cast on our homepage. And I certainly recommend people check that out as a companion to the Stone Cold podcast yesterday with AJ. We want to take your phone calls. We want to talk to you about what you think about what's going on. I asked Jim his thoughts on the quality of the AJ match with John Cena, but I also asked him about whether what happened Monday changed his thoughts compared to how he was thinking about Sunday about Roman's push. And I want to talk about that in particular after our first commercial break. So when we come back, we're going to take your calls, and I also want to talk more with Jim about what we see going forward and what the booking on Raw did to maybe change, if it did, your thinking and in our thinking on where they're going headed into Battleground and SummerSlam. So we'll be back after our first commercial message. When you're looking to tune in live to the PW Torch Livecast, find out about the next episode, or just catch up on an episode you missed, go to our new website, pwtorchlivecast.com. You can select shows by specific day, specific host, and format, including a grid of our latest interviews and best of selections on the homepage. That is pwtorchlivecast.com, where you can stream our show live and listen to past shows on demand. That's pwtorchlivecast.com. Do you shop at Amazon.com? If so, do you know there's a way for you to support the PW Torch Livecast without doing anything different other than starting your shopping at pwtorch.com/Amazon? When you go to pwtorch.com/Amazon, click on the Amazon link and you land at the Amazon homepage. But anything you buy on that shopping trip, we get a commission for. It's a way to throw a few extra quarters, maybe a couple bucks in the tip jar, as a way to say thanks for what we do here at the PW Torch Livecast. So next time you're about to shop at Amazon, don't type in AMAZ. Stop right there and type in pwtorch.com/Amazon. That's pwtorch.com/Amazon. A free, easy way to help support what we do here at the Livecast. Thank you. All right, we are back. I'm Wade Keller, joined by Jim Valley. This is the Tuesday edition of the PW Torch Livecast on June 21st, 2016. We're talking about last night's three-hour Raw and Sunday night's pay-per-view, Money in the Bank, Dean Ambrose winning, cashing in, becoming champion, debuting as champion last night on Raw. The way that the match was set up for Battleground, certainly in a way, Jim, almost makes Dean Ambrose, yes, Dean Ambrose is champion, but by immediately defending against Roman and Seth, it's almost like they all just sort of share the title. Because in a three-way match, as we've learned from WWE, you have a 33.33% chance of walking out as champion, no matter what. So really, I kind of look at what happens coming out of Battleground in terms of who the champion is as a toss-up. And I think the X factor, or the additional ingredient to throw in here, is that there's a possibility there's a disputed finish, and that's what leads to there being two champions, one on Raw and one on SmackDown. So I think everything is up in the air. I think Roman losing the championship still counts for something. In that, even if they're, if we're trying to figure out, has Vince given up on Roman? Is he hedging again? Is this a sign that the ratings last week, barely above a 2.0 rating, scared Vince into shaking things up? House show attendance being down. It's the first Monday after the NBA and NHL season are over. He's got this window before the NFL Monday Night Football starts to really win some people over, draw some ratings, boost network subs because of it. Because remember, the more people who are watching Raw live, the more engaged fans you have who are prioritizing Raw. Consider it a priority to watch above other things. They're your top candidates to order WWE Network and be into Battleground and SummerSlam and NXT TakeOver specials and the Stone Cold podcasts. You want as many people as possible watching Raw live. That means you have more people enthusiastic and engaged about your product. So having a double title change on Sunday is a way to kind of spark interest and shock people into going, oh, things are different here. Yet, the Shield in a three-way, it's a big match, but with Roman Reigns and Seth in the title shot, it's not exactly shaking things up in a big way, and it could end up right back where we started with Roman as champion. So I think Roman losing, though, still takes something away from Roman. WWE's been making a big deal for a few years about long title reigns. Going back to CM Punk, Brie Bella, Charlotte, New Day, they're instilling in fans a belief that holding a title belt for a long time counts for something. Roman doesn't get that bragging right now. So I'm curious, for those of you out there listening to us live, what do you think? Do you think Roman Reigns losing the title means Vince is hedging, or is this just a hot shot to try to spark ratings? Jim, anything additional on that before we move to our first call?
Yeah, I think the other factor is the SmackDown going live. I mean, this is obviously, as everyone knows by now, you know, pressure from the USA Network to get SmackDown ratings up. And maybe the long-term plan was for Roman Reigns to be a long-term champion, but they needed to create some controversy around the world title to split it up off to a SmackDown, or at least par a claim of the world title off to SmackDown. So, I mean, maybe Roman also is a victim of circumstance of SmackDown as well. I think all those points you made are very valid, but I also think that this issue with SmackDown and it getting its own world title could also be a factor in the equation.
Good stuff, Jim. All right, let's go to our first call of the day. Let's go to area code 845. 845, please state your name and where you're calling from.
Hi, this is Tim from Poughkeepsie, New York.
Tim from Poughkeepsie?
Yeah.
Yep, go ahead, Tim. Thanks for calling.
Didn't really have much to add. I mean, I mainly wanted to comment about the pay-per-view itself.
Yeah, go for it.
Is it just me or I just can't find the person. I almost said the guy wanted to shoot myself. I can't find the person. I mean, it's not Ambrose based off of last night's reaction with the crowd.
Right.
I don't think it's Rollins. It's definitely not Reigns. It's not Cena, and I'm just like, I don't even know. I can't even pick someone. So who is it going to be? Is it going to be a called up Finn Balor? I mean, I don't. Is it someone we don't know when we're 2 years from finding out? I just feel like it was a hot shot, like you were talking about, to do the double title change. But I'm sensing it's not long-term in any way. So it's like, where are we going? Nothing's working based off of the crowd reaction.
Well, last night's crowd, Jim, I mean, when I knew we were in trouble when Dean Ambrose, you know, grabbed the title belt out of the back of the taxi and almost forgot it, which I thought was funny. And then he's strutting into the building and they stay on that shot and there's no crowd reaction. And I'm like, are they showing this in the arena? This is awkward. And it was like that for a lot of the show. In fact, it wasn't until Enzo and Cass came out that the crowd woke up. That's bad news when your new world champion is not getting the type of pop that somebody at the end of a long quest, at the end of a long journey that the fans were on, and he finally wins a championship. I mean, I've seen that so many times, and it works. I was there in Baltimore when Sting won the WCW title from Ric Flair in 1990, and that was supposed to be the beginning of a new era, and it didn't quite work out for Sting. He just wasn't ready, and they didn't have the right opponents lined up, and they ended up kind of hedging and going back and forth, rightfully so in a way, I think. But I was there for that, and that building went absolutely nuts for Sting. It was the end of a journey that they told. I wasn't in the building for Hulk Hogan winning the AWA or almost seeming to win the AWA championship, but I certainly saw the clips as a kid in the AWA home base territory when Hulk Hogan seemed to have won the AWA title from Nick Bockwinkel. His music played, he celebrated, he left with a belt, only to have it announced that on a technicality, Nick was still champion afterwards. That crowd went completely bonkers. They didn't do that for Dean Ambrose because, well, Dean has been promoted as not a mid-card guy, but not a top threat. He's been there for comedy relief just last Thursday on SmackDown. And I thought it was funny. I thought Jericho and Dean did a great job playing off of each other, but Dean was scaring Jericho by pretending that he was about to spill hot coffee on Jericho's very expensive imported rug that he laid out in the ring. And that's not, I don't know. I mean, it's zany, it's out there, but I don't think it's the type of buildup that leads to a huge pop. Now, this could just be Phoenix, and maybe people will love Dean next week on Raw, but that did concern me. So I'm kind of reacting to that aspect of what Tim said, Jim, but who do you think is the guy? I'm higher on Seth Rollins, as I think Seth Rollins turning babyface could be the guy. I think that Seth as a heel should be, if they're going to keep him heel, they should still, you know, probably put the belt on Seth and have a variety of baby faces chase him. And yes, Finn Balor and heck, Shinsuke Nakamura, I think, is a rock star. And if they went unconventional, he could be huge. AJ Styles as a heel, I think, has earned his keep as a world champion. But are we going to have a committee of top guys without Vince finding that, quote, next John Cena? Because I think it's pretty clear that's not Roman Reigns. Are we going to have kind of a committee of top guys and not that singular star for a while? And are we, as Tim said, maybe 2 years away from somebody rising above the pack?
Tim could be right. I tend to agree with you that of all the people that are available, I think from a wrestling fan perspective and from a management perspective, you've got to look at it also as the top guy is, you know, I think even JBL was making reference to it with Dean Ambrose. I think it was on the pay-per-view when he was saying, you know, could you imagine that guy on the Today Show? And it's like, you know, he's valid. You really couldn't. And I think with Rollins, you have someone that the hardcores would accept and that who would look good and be a nice presence on the Today Show. And for Make-A-Wish and all of those ambassador things that are so critical to WWE management, he's a nice compromise. Is he the guy that's going to sell Stone Cold Double merch? No, not at all. I want to mention about the crowd. I have a friend who was down in Phoenix last night, and he was texting me, and he thought that the reaction was pretty good for Ambrose. He thought the reaction was amazing for the surprise for the boss. And what he did say was, speaking of pushes and things, you know, people not responding to pushes, that Corbin is just flat as all get out. That it's just not happening. And I never got that guy to begin with. He's got a weird look. He's got weird hair. He's got no expressions. I don't see any intensity in the ring. Other than the fact that he's tall, I don't get it. Oh, by the way, speaking of tall, that reminds me. Speaking of guys, it could be a Big Cass. Big Cass may be your guy. He's tall. He seems to be getting a lot of attention and a lot of protection from management. Let's not, you know, it's very early, but let's not count Big Cass out as a dark horse in the running to be the guy.
If it's Big Cass, I'll be surprised. I'm not ruling him out, but I haven't thought that about him. So you'll be the first person, Jim, if this happens, to proclaim that. But I'm not saying like, oh, you're crazy for thinking that. I just think he's just, I mean, I still remember. It's just too fresh in my mind, him looking like deer in headlights and nervous on all those NXT promos last year. He's come so far so quickly. Maybe he keeps advancing really quickly. You know, I mean, he might be somebody who he gets it. He's in his stride working with Enzo. Enzo's injury might have helped him kind of get brave doing some mic work on his own. And yeah, I mean, JBL had two interesting comments in the last couple of days. I think both were on SmackDown last night. Actually, he said, Big Cass reminds him of a young Justin Hawk Bradshaw, and, you know, just kind of physically and style wise. And Justin Hawk Bradshaw went on to become a world champion, but with a completely different persona. But that could certainly happen with Big Cass. But he also, though, declared, he said, "Mark my words, etch it in stone." He said, "Etch it in stone. Baron Corbin will be world champion someday." Now you'd say, "Well, why is that a big deal?" It's just a color commentator making a statement. Well, first of all, I'm higher on Baron Corbin than you are, Jim, by a good amount, even though he's got a long ways to go, and I think he should still be in developmental. I think he's got a super believable heelish character that people genuinely want to boo. I'm almost rooting against
really?
Him because, yes, I'm almost rooting against him to succeed because he's so believable as a guy that you don't want to see succeed. That said, and I was higher on his match on Sunday than the Roundtable crew that I was with too. I think that he and Ziggler put on a decent match. Ziggler, you know, obviously carried that match, but Baron should he should still be in developmental. But I like Baron. But my point on this is Vince McMahon feeds JBL his lines, and Vince McMahon has to be thinking. Vince isn't going to want JBL, nor is JBL going to declare that on his own. And Vince doesn't want JBL saying that on his own, unless Vince is wanting people to think of Baron Corbin as a future world champion. Baron needs to go further. A lot of guys have been at Baron's stage and not made it. But there's something about him that he gets. I really do. I think he gets that it's your job to control the crowd, not them control you as a heel. And there's a demeanor that he has that I think can draw money with people paying to see him get beat up. Now, I think Roman probably is going to be better in that same role than Baron because I think he's much further along in the ring. But, yeah, I'm higher on Baron Corbin than you are. I just wish he's still in developmental getting better.
Okay, let me say this, that oftentimes I agree with you. You and I are fairly aligned with things.
Right.
And even when we're not, sometimes I can usually see your point of view. Like you're much higher on the history of Jerry Blackwell, but I can see your point on Jerry Blackwell. I am sitting here going, what do I miss on Baron Corbin that you see? I do see the point about not being affected by his lack of reaction and dictating things. That's a valid point that I hadn't considered. But I think he's got a weird body. I think that he's got no expression, particularly since Vince McMahon is a firm believer in wrestling being all about the face. I think that his hair is going south very quickly, and that's not going to serve him well. I don't see this lone wolf character that you apparently see and that he's supposed to portray. And I've seen, Dolph Ziggler drag some stiffs through some matches, and his matches with Ziggler have been unspectacular. So I agree that he does need more seasoning, and maybe he could be one of those guys that needs more time. And I think that this time for him right now is bad, but clearly management is still behind him because he gets announced every time that he's won the Battle Royal, the Andre the Giant Battle Royal. And I think they stopped announcing Big Show winning it after 3 weeks. So, that's become his Undertaker streak that they're still promoting. So clearly management agrees with you and doesn't see it for me. But according to my friend in Phoenix last night, it was crickets for him.
Yeah. Oh, he's got a long ways to go. I'm mostly underlining that I'm not giving up on him. I see there's pros and cons, but there's definitely some pros there. And what I'm mainly doing is highlighting that comment that jumped out to me by JBL. Etch it in stone, he'll be world champion someday. Maybe JBL just threw it out there. I just don't think that's something that gets thrown out there. So that, I think Vince is high on this guy. It's going to be interesting to watch his
I think he's got a shot at being world champion, TNA world champion. But yeah.
All right. Very good. Hey, we got a new sponsor this month called Fan Essentials. How would you like to get all of your favorite NBA teams merchandise delivered straight to your doorstep? Check out fanessentials.net. All you do is pick your favorite sports team, and every month you get your team's gear shipped right to your door. They find the sports gear so you don't have to. No waiting in lines, no overpaying at the arena. Each fan box comes with packed full with some amazing gear. It makes a great gift idea for any sports fan. Prices start at just $34.99, the price of a T-shirt at an arena. You get a box full of merchandise on your favorite team. Go check it out, fanessentials.net. And here's the great part. Promo code PWTORCH gets you 30% off that $34.99 price everyone else is paying. So go check it out. FanEssentials.net, PWTORCH, on the sign-up page to get 30% off your first month. FanEssentials.net. That's FanEssentials.net. Get all the essentials you need. All right. Let's go back to the phone lines and excuse my slight laryngitis the last few days also, if anybody's picked up on that. But I'm pushing through injury, Jim. I am a trooper here, doing the live cast with a slight case of laryngitis. So
working
everybody
hard.
Exactly. I'm working hard. I'm setting a good example for everybody. All right, let's go to area code 510 next. 510, please state your name and where you're calling from.
Hi, Aaron from San Francisco.
Hey, Aaron, thanks for calling. What have you got for us?
I will be honest. I have become a casual fan after that long WrestleMania that they had. So, lately, I mean, it has been for the past couple of years now. Wrestling feels not so organic anymore, and that's probably because they keep pushing down guys.
Yeah.
And so I was saying, as a reporter, as somebody who covers wrestling, do you feel like less invested in the storylines? Clearly, you know, they are picking the guys, and back in the days, everything was organic. We were the one who would pick heels and baby faces. I just wanted to get you guys' thoughts on that.
Jim, why don't you take that first?
Let me say this. I think as far as – I remember the last time we were on, you know, we were talking – I was talking about how the most successful shows on TV right now, the ones that get the most buzz, they tend to be episodic. And I see some very good episodic things happening right now where you have a lot of questions with the WWE. What's going to happen with the Shield and the world title? What's going on with John Cena and AJ Styles? And as goofy as it was, what was up with Xavier Woods and the Wyatt family last night? So there's some things that they're doing now. They're leading us along instead of everything being compartmentalized to shows. So I do like that. That said, I think that's a valid point about some things not feeling very, very organic. And I don't know, maybe the last time that they did feel organic. And I think one of the reasons is that this is where Vince has wanted to be for the longest time, where he's got so many revenue streams coming in from TV and the network and international deals and licensing with products and other things that I'm not even naming, I can't even think of, that in many ways, we've talked about this with Roman Reigns on top, that it's the name brand, WWE, that sells, and not necessarily the individual as much as it used to be in the past with the NWA and WWF when they would push people. You know, you'd get pulled. You know, Kevin Nash, when he was Diesel, was the lowest drawing, maybe the lowest drawing champion of all time. And, you know, he had a year reign where they did the experiment, and then they went to Bret Hart. Same thing with Lex Luger and Bret Hart when they were competing. You know, that's the way it worked. You know, you look back in history and some guys got very short world title reigns because they simply weren't drawing. But now it's the name brand that draws, and I think that's why things don't feel as organic, because a lot of times the fans don't have to listen. Like with Daniel Bryan, the fans were begging for Daniel Bryan and were just, you know, here, take my money for Daniel Bryan. And it took a long time because WWE has put all of these things in place where the brand draws. So I think on one level, that's a really valid point as far as things not feeling or being organic.
I think also what WWE's got themselves, how Vince McMahon and his inner circle and team look at things is, well, there's the people who pay top dollar to go to Sunday and Monday night shows on school nights, and they voice their opinions. But then there's all the other fans we're actually chasing after. You know, the casual fans, the mainstream fans, the kids, the adolescents, the women, the families. They're the ones going Friday and Saturday night and the matinee shows on Sunday, and they react differently. I mean, and they do. There's truth to that. I think it was Baton Rouge a couple weekends ago. Roman Reigns got the biggest pop of anybody on the show and cheered. That doesn't happen on Sunday nights and Monday nights. And I think WWE is finding that they have different audiences that they're catering to. I think the danger with WWE, and we're seeing this, is that they've dismissed the vocal, who they think are this vocal minority who are going to stick around no matter what. They've dismissed their opinion. And that leads to ratings dipping perilously close to a 1 point something. And with tons of analysis and perspective on that rating in last week's Pro Wrestling Torch newsletter, We've got quotes from my coverage the last time the ratings dipped below 2.0 nearly 20 years ago when I was writing about that in the 90s in the Pro Wrestling Torch newsletter and what they did to fix that problem and what happened. And that was in the cover story last week. WWE Sunday night, you know, tried to shift things around a little bit and shake things up. But when it gets right down to it, what's going to work is addressing Aaron, what Aaron brought up, and maybe rethinking their perspective, which is the people who are the most vocal might be right. In other words, do what Todd Martin talks about. Listen to the fans and push who they cheer as babyfaces, and then listen to the fans and push the heels who they boo the most as heels. That's how you do it. Now, there's times you want to switch them around. If the fans are cheering Jericho, Jericho can turn the fans against him. Kevin Owens maybe gets some cheers from fans who really respect his work. Kevin Owens can get those fans to boo him, and the majority who don't know his body of work and aren't, quote, appreciative of his work rate, he can turn them also with great heel work by being the chicken shit heel who's running out of the ring and trying to escape a fight, not hitting it head on, and ultimately, while he has some witty lines, comes across as being outwitted and having less integrity than the baby faces he's facing. So you want to manipulate the crowd a little bit. Every once in a while, you can say, no, I'm right on this. We just got to work harder. But it seems like Vince is constantly saying, we're right on this. All the fans are wrong, or half the fan base is wrong. The ratings don't count. The house show attendance doesn't count. All I care about is, well, Roman's selling more merchandise than anyone. Well, that's because his merchandise is on the front page of the WWE shop, and there's more of it than anybody else. And he's the main event, and you're going to have the people who buy merchandise in that 8 to 15-year-old age group or 8 to 13-year-old age group with families. They're going to buy for their kids the number one guy who's main eventing. Of course his merch is selling well. The question is, how much would Seth be selling if he were the lead babyface? How much would Finn Balor be selling instead if he were the lead babyface? So when it comes to whether it feels organic, part of making a product feel organic is listening to the fans a little bit more, or maybe a lot more than Vince has been. And also, I mean, last night, Jim, Roman Reigns telling the fans who are saying you can't wrestle, calm down, sip your beer, chill out. I thought that had to feel – I could feel Roman just like the tension inside of him unwinding a little bit to be able to release that comment that he's been wanting to say for a year and a half at least. And to be able to tell the fans off, I thought felt good, but I also thought it was a window into what a great heel he can be. It didn't happen last night, but I am still an advocate, Jim, for flipping Seth and Dean, maybe, because I think for Dean to be taken seriously, he might need to go heel. Have Dean and Seth, Seth and Roman all flip. I think Roman's a better heel. Dean will be a more credible heel than a babyface because I think he's been marginalized as a zany upper mid-card babyface. And I just think fans want to cheer Seth. The way he wrestled on Sunday night against Roman was babyface style. Flip them all around, and then I think you address our caller Aaron's point. Things start to feel organic again. If you had to pick either or, would you flip all three or keep all three where they are if you had to do one or the other?
I don't think you do it suddenly. I think, you know,
right,
you do it maybe by the time maybe SummerSlam comes or something like that. I don't think you just do it, you know, next week on Raw and it just happens. Here's the thing, though. It's like if you just listen to fans, it's like, you know, let's not you because you're more plugged in, but it's like, you know, me. I watch Raw and I, you know, for the past 15 years now, we see John Cena get booed and the natural reaction is to say, oh, they need to turn John Cena. Everybody hates John Cena. John Cena, nobody likes him. He's hated. But the truth was much more nuanced than that. And you defended keeping John Cena babyface is that, yeah, his merchandise was selling and he was being cheered on the non-televised house show. And his numbers were very good. And I think it's more than just placement. I think that there's a group of fans that, you know, are just casual fans or they're the core audience fans who watch wrestling and don't necessarily read the Torch. But they, they're the ones paying the money. And that's why John Cena was staying on top. I respect Todd Martin, but I think there's more than just a reaction. You do have to look at those other channels to see if there are other numbers where said babyface, be it Roman or Dean or Kevin Owens, is holding up and making the company money, and you go from there. It's not just our men 25 to 50, you know, booing Roman Reigns.
I do want to get a quick plug in that Jason Powell, who normally, or I shouldn't say normally, but is frequently on the Tuesday live cast, he'll be back in a couple weeks on this program on Tuesday. If you want to hear his thoughts on Money in the Bank, he is on the Ross Report, which drops tonight around, I think, 9 Eastern. That'll be available on iTunes, Podcast One, and all kinds of other places. You can probably find a link to it at ProWrestling.net, Jason Powell's site. So Jason Powell on the Ross Report tonight. Want to give a shout-out to Jason and Jim Ross, both Jim, a frequent guest on Thursdays when I do Interview Thursday on the live cast, and Jason Powell, obviously a longtime co-host here on Tuesday. So check that out to get Jason's thoughts on what Jim and I are talking about right now here on the Tuesday PW Torch livecast. We're going to take more calls when we come back from this commercial break. Huge news, huge news. One of the biggest news weeks ever in UFC. I think July is going to be one of the biggest news months in the history of mixed martial arts. The UFC sale, amazing numbers thrown out, different investment groups. What does this mean to the future of MMA? How will UFC be different? How will MMA be different? How will fighters be treated differently? How will Dana White, still running things, be instructed to act differently, if at all? So many questions being addressed right now at our sister website and we're just a few weeks away from UFC 200 with Brock Lesnar, a big tie into pro wrestling. You're going to want to check this out. Here's some details on our sister site. We know you're a pro wrestling fan because you're listening to the PW Torch livecast. There's a good chance you're also a fan of the UFC and all of mixed martial arts. And if so, we hope you'll check out our sister website at MMATorch.com, covering the news of MMA every single day with breaking news, exclusive analysis, an array of columns, live event coverage, flashbacks, and so much more. Check it out. That's MMATorch.com, or download the free MMA Torch app in the iPhone and Android app stores. That's MMATorch.com. If you're like me, you've got a list of your favorite podcasts that you listen to throughout the week, and also your favorite websites that you listen to throughout the week, but they don't always overlap. But in the case of PW Torch, they do. We hope not only will you listen to the PW Torch livecast every day, but also visit pwtorch.com every day for the latest insider perspective, breaking news, TV reports, live event reports, live pay-per-view coverage, exclusive editorials, and a wide range of other features. Check it out every day. It's mobile-friendly, desktop and laptop-friendly. Stay up to the minute, stay up to date with pwtorch.com. All right, we're back. Let's go to another phone call and go to area code 770. You're up next, 770. Please state your name and the city you're calling from.
Jim in Atlanta, Georgia.
Hey, Jim, good to hear from you. What have you got for us?
Three quick things. You brought up the Roman Reigns beer comment last night. Man, he just looked great saying that. You wanted to cheer him when he said that. So I think fans would naturally cheer him when they try to turn him heel. They're going to do the opposite of whatever WWE wants them to do.
Yeah, but I think that if Roman is telling off the fans who don't like him, and those fans genuinely don't like him, I think he can actually be an effective heel. I think Chris Jericho's become an effective heel, not at a top level, but I don't prescribe to the idea that the everybody who's booing Roman right now will cheer him if Roman just starts acting more like he seems to be naturally acclimated to do. I think there's a hostility towards him as a person, towards him as the push he's getting, and also in contrast to others they respect more. So I don't want to get caught in this trap of WWE management saying, well, if we turn Roman baby heel, the fans are just going to cheer him and it's going to be just as screwed up. I just think Roman is a better fit to be a heel, but I think in the end there will be more fans who are booing him now who will still boo him, even though, yes, there will be some who cheer him because they're just happy to see him lining up his personality behind the scenes with his person, or I shouldn't say behind the scenes, his natural on-air persona matching the role that he's prescribed on the show.
That makes sense.
Jim?
Did Dean Ambrose seem a little off to y'all last night?
He always seems off, but what do you mean by that? Elaborate.
Like, usually he's always doing something witty or funny or whatever. Last night he just kind of just seemed mellowed out, it seemed like.
I wonder, Jim Valley, as opposed to Jim from Atlanta, our caller. Jim Valley, what do you think of Dean's performance last night? I've commented on it, that it didn't feel monumental to me. It felt like instead of a cup of coffee that he almost spilled, it was a title belt he almost forgot. And I thought it was a funny moment, And I thought there was a little bit of Dean in the ring talking about, you know, how it was a big deal. But I didn't see the return of Dean Ambrose from The Shield, the one who I thought had main event heel potential, maybe main event babyface potential. I didn't see last night as some crowning moment where Dean raised his game to a more serious main event level. And I wonder if that's because he won the title in the cheapest way you can. Yes, he earned it in a Money in the Bank match, and I think that counts for something. But in terms of cashing in, I mean, he blindsided a heel with a briefcase and won with one single move. This is not what he spent more than a decade the art and skill of being a wrestler mastering. I mean, Jim, you or I could probably run in the ring without tripping over our feet and hit somebody with a briefcase and pin somebody. I probably couldn't pull off the dirty deeds like he did. But still, it wasn't like I almost wonder if there's not part of him that just is like, well, this isn't exactly a proud way to win a championship, and he's expecting fully to lose it at Battleground to somebody. Maybe it just didn't feel like a big moment to him because it was a transition championship. Jim Valley, your thoughts on Dean's performance last night? Oh, I gotta turn on Jim's mic. My apologies, Jim. Go ahead with comments on Dean.
I don't know that there's really been a story that we're following with Dean Ambrose, so I don't know about that. And I think that in this era, that cashing in on Money in the Bank is completely acceptable. I mean, we've been seeing it now since Edge first won the title. So I don't know. As far as him being off, what was weird is that his hair was dry. Usually all members of the Shield have got wet hair, so that was odd. But he did look a little pale. It wouldn't surprise me if maybe he was out last night. Maybe he and his girlfriend Renee Young were celebrating winning the world title. That's possible. I mean, as far as was it a big deal to fans or not? No, because he has been sort of start and stop. And there's probably, you know, after the way he was treated by Brock Lesnar and he's lost a lot of matches and things, it's like he finally beat Jericho, but there really hasn't been some sort of narrative storyline, story arc that we've been following with Dean Ambrose. He almost seems like a guy who just kind of fills whatever role they need him to fill. And right now they've decided that, oh yeah, we should pull the trigger on a three-way with the Shield. So to give the match some credibility and put a twist, we need Dean Ambrose to win the world title. So I can understand that there isn't a lot of excitement, and maybe fans are sensing that he's going to be a short-term champion. So maybe he does need a little tenure to build some excitement and credibility with his title run.
All right. I want to take, or actually let's take the third question or third topic from Jim from Atlanta. Go ahead, Jim.
Do you see it being a double pin at the pay-per-view for like Seth and Roman, both Finn and Dean, and that's how they split the titles?
Jim, go ahead. Jim Valley.
What was that again? I couldn't hear him very well.
Jim from Atlanta.
I said, do you see it being a double pin at the pay-per-view, or I guess with Network Special, with Seth and Roman both pinning Dean Ambrose, and that's how they split the titles?
It could be. It's certainly an option as far as some sort of weird finish with confusion as far as, that could certainly lead to a title split. Absolutely.
Yeah, I could very well see that. Definitely. I mean, with a roster split and possibly two world champions, one for each brand, this is a perfect scenario to do it. So, yeah, I definitely think so. All right. What do you think, Jim, in Atlanta? Do you think that's what they're doing?
Yeah, I think that would happen. The only thing I'm scared about is once this happens, there won't be a clause for a rematch clause because they'll be on separate shows, is what I'm assuming. So if Dean loses, how is he going to get his rematch?
True. Well, because if there's two champions, he'll at least be on one brand where there's one of the champions.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah. But maybe he'll join Byron Saxton on ECW, as they joked about. All right. I've alluded to it a couple times. PW Torch VIP membership. It is $99 for a full year, $27.50 for 3 months, $10 to try it for a month, and you can have that $10 price roll over each month. It is a ton of value, 28 years of archives, and ad-free access to our website and our mobile site, and 75 to 100 VIP exclusive shows, including this live cast and every additional live cast with the ads taken out. You can listen just to content. It's kind of like Hulu Plus, where you can add a couple bucks to a Hulu subscription and have the ads taken out. And boy, is that fun. I was watching SmackDown Now I've turned a VIP plug into a Hulu plug. I was watching SmackDown, and it was so nice not having to hit the fast forward button when watching SmackDown on Hulu. They just roll from one segment to the other. It's worth a few extra bucks for me to do that for Hulu. You can go ad-free with a VIP membership and not only get this live cast, which is on 6-7 days a week ad-free, but also the every single day Wade Keller hotline over 1500 straight days. In fact, without skipping a day, going back, I think over 6 years now, maybe we're approaching 2000 straight days without a day off, covering the news, answering VIP member questions, reviewing Raw in depth with analysis every Monday night. So much more. Plus the flagship shows that I co-host with Bruce Mitchell on weekends, couple hours with Bruce, who knows his stuff and has opinions and backs them up. And same for Todd Martin, who's been a great addition to the staff, joined the team about a year ago, and it just does phenomenal work. You don't know what you're missing until you go VIP. There is such a high level of knowledge that on our team and such a diversity of shows and approaches to covering wrestling. I really hope you'll check it out. Here's some details on not only our coverage of current events, but something else that I'm really proud of that we have on the VIP website, which is the ability to learn about history and experience it the way that it was covered originally. This isn't, there's a lot of ways to cover wrestling history. Jim Valley does it Saturday mornings with special guests and looking back. But a really cool way, and you can only find it at PW Torch VIP, is by listening to old radio shows. And we have three of them, Pro Wrestling Focus, Pro Wrestling Spotlight, and Total Chaos Radio. Here's some details on that that might tempt you, if you haven't yet, to become a VIP member. Here's some details. And when we come back, more calls. As a PW Torch Livecast listener, you've probably heard me talk about PW Torch VIP membership. One of the great perks about becoming a PW Torch VIP member at pwtorch.com/govip is access to vintage radio shows that are only available with a PW Torch VIP membership. The entire run of the Pro Wrestling Focus radio show that I hosted on KFAN in the early 1990s, over 100 episodes, available when you sign up instantly. Also, on an ongoing basis, we're adding more Pro Wrestling Spotlight radio shows hosted by John Arezzi in New York, which ran from the late 80s through the mid-1990s. These shows have not been heard since they aired originally on New York radio, and VIP members have access to listen to them exclusively as part of their VIP membership. Also, Total Chaos Radio, hosted by PW Torch Livecast Saturday morning wrestling host Jim Valley during the Attitude Era, are also part of a VIP membership, new ones added on a regular basis. These vintage classic radio shows with big name interviews, guest analysts, including me, on a regular basis talking about the news of the day with the hosts, are accessible when you become a VIP member through our ad-free VIP website. You can stream them right on your phone or right on your computer, but also an RSS feed that is accessible only for VIP members via popular apps on iPhone, Android, and even iTunes. Check it out. It's a big perk that comes with a VIP membership. Get details at pwtorch.com/govip. That's pwtorch.com/govip. Have a blast listening to familiar voices from this live cast talk about wrestling from the 1990s through the Attitude Era exclusively as a PW Torch VIP member. All right, we're back live on the PW Torch live cast at, it's about 12:56 Eastern time right now, Tuesday, June 21st, 2016. Pat McNeil takes over tomorrow night as host, and then I'll be back on Thursday with Interview Thursday. And then Friday, Bruce Mitchell, Torch senior columnist, is joined by Travis Bryant from the PW Torch East Coast cast. And they will wrap up the week of news and take your calls. And then Saturday, Jim Valley returns to his hosting chair for Saturday morning wrestling. Jim, do you have any ideas what you're doing on Saturday morning? Oh, I got to put Jim. I do this second time on the show. Hopefully I won't do it a third. Let me turn Jim's mic on. There you go. Jim, what do you got planned for Saturday?
You know, I got a tweet from somebody who wanted a performer, a wrestler who's been on the old 605 NWA World Championship Wrestling shows, the Crockett shows that we used to watch on TBS back in the day. So I reached out, and this Saturday we're going to have, at least I'm scheduled to have, George South, legendary Carolina wrestler, enhancement guy, a guy that Ric Flair always wanted to work with on television, who's wrestled for Vince, he's wrestled for Crockett, he's wrestled for everybody. So that should be a very entertaining show, and we can talk about the old NWA TBS World Championship Wrestling, the 605 shows.
He wrote a good book and was a good guest on the live cast once, and I look forward to that. He was a carpenter, as they say. He was the glue in some matches who made the stars look like stars. So great guest. I definitely encourage people to check that out on Saturday morning. Let's go ahead. Oh, that's my phone alarm saying start the live cast, but we've been doing it for nearly an hour. All right. So let's go to our next caller here. Let's go to 330. 330, thanks for holding. Please state your name and the city you're calling from.
Hey, what's up? It's Anthony. I'm calling from Youngstown, Ohio, home of the Cleveland Cavaliers of Northeast Ohio, of course.
Excellent. Are you still is this the region of Ohio still celebrating?
Oh yeah, we're Northeast Ohio. We're a little east of Akron.
Do you think Kevin Love's going to be on your team next year?
He's good against 29 other teams. But,
that's a good point. Yeah, and he was good enough to help on Monday night too. Sunday night, excuse me.
Yeah, he had 14 rebounds, so he's pretty good. You know,
I watched him come into his own as a Timberwolves fan, and he's a phenomenal player. I just think he's not being utilized as well in the Cleveland setup as he could on another team. So that's going to be interesting to watch. But anyway, we got some weird wind noises, I think, on your mic or something, Anthony. If you could put your hand up to the phone that'd be helpful. And go ahead with your question or comment for us.
Okay, I have a question. Like, do you think that maybe they're sort of doing this whole, having the three shield guys go at each other at Battleground, like a little too early? Maybe should have saved this for at least for SummerSlam? Or I would try to do it at WrestleMania at least. Where it gone there.
Yeah, I'm going to mute your mic while we respond, then I'll bring you back, Anthony. Jim, that is an issue, and sometimes it's prudent to rush things, if that makes sense. It sounds like an oxymoron, but it's prudent to rush things if you need to get somewhere. And WWE right now in the network era, it's kind of the opposite of what a lot of people conventionally thought, although Jason Powell and I constantly remind people we were on the other side of this because we thought it was obvious it would be more like this. They're not saying, oh, we got your money already, so we don't need to make the pay-per-view special. What's actually happened is instead of having 180 to 250,000 people ordering these monthly pay-per-views, and we're not all that excited about it because these non-marquee brand pay-per-views aren't written. There's nothing we can do to move the needle, so let's just throw it out there and move on to things that are more important, like our next big TV deal. They actually now treat pay-per-views more importantly, and Jason Powell and I called it because they want to get new subscribers and keep the subscribers they have. They're excited about this new toy. And they actually, I think, have been making pay-per-views seem more important the last year and a half, not less important. Even the Battleground-type pay-per-views, or talking about Money in the Bank being the best ever and WrestleMania-worthy matches. It also, we're noticing this pattern at the end of quarters. January, February, March, April, May, June. They want to be able to report second quarter numbers being very high. So suddenly Money in the Bank takes on more importance. Now, Battleground is at the start of quarter three. But it's also in the midst of the roster split. So at Battleground, they might have some booking scheme in mind that's, I won't say forcing their hand, but encouraging them to play the Shield three-way match hand sooner than otherwise they would, because they do plan to do maybe a controversial double pin finish with disputed championship, a champ for each brand. And that can change things. Now, in a different environment, without a roster split, and in the old days when they didn't care as much about these other off-month pay-per-views, maybe they would be saving it to try to pop a big buy rate for SummerSlam. But they're no longer trying to pop 2-3 big buy rates per year. They're trying to get a steady, happy base of 1.2 million and growing regular $10 a month customers. So their business setup has changed where now, yes, SummerSlam is still important. WrestleMania is still most important. But they're not trying to pop a buy rate. They're constantly trying to satisfy existing customers, prevent them from canceling, engage people who are paying so they feel it's worth it, and get more people to sign up. So there's less of an incentive, not more, to save the big, big matchups for only a few marquee events. So both booking and the network, I think, change that equation. Jim Valley, your thoughts on that?
Yeah, I think for the most part, we have seen some pretty good shows and things like that. But we've also seen a couple of ones that probably wouldn't be pay-per-views if we still had the primarily pay-per-view era.
We saw those during the pay-per-view era, Jim. We saw pay-per-view editions during the pay-per-view. That's nothing new.
But no, generally I do agree with the statement you just made. But I will say this. This era has also allowed them to take a few more chances with a few more people that they probably wouldn't have done if it was still, you know, $50 a pop to buy a show. So, no, I think,
for instance,
I think this has been
like who,
you know, Jim? I think we've Kevin Owens, I'd say even Dean Ambrose probably is someone who comes to mind immediately.
Yeah.
You know, Sami Zayn, you know, we've seen them spotlighted in ways that I don't think they would have been in the pay-per-view era, but that's just one man's opinion. But no, generally, I think I agree with that statement, yes.
Yep, very good. Let's go back to Anthony Acevedo Wood here. Anthony, anything else for us?
Sorry, give me a second. I'm outside. another thing, do you think maybe they're going to try to make sure, like have, like, the AJ and Cena rivalry go to SmackDown and have, like, the Shield rivalry go to Raw, like kind of be like how, like, WWE did with the whole Hogan, you know, did one thing and then had, it was Sheik and Sergeant Slaughter did the other thing. Like, I think that was like the early 80s.
Yeah. Jim, and by the way, anybody who's just joining us, we did start our show an hour early from normal. So if you're just tuning in now, we're past the 1 hour mark and we're still taking calls, and we encourage you to give us a call, 646-721-9828. I've noticed the last few minutes the phone line's filling up, so people expecting us at the normal time tuning in. So we welcome you. We'll stay over, we'll do some overtime here and take some more calls. If you did miss the beginning of the show, you can certainly find us on demand at pwtorchlivecast.com. And if you're a VIP member, of course, we'll have the ad-free version of the show up on the VIP audio feed. The VIP audio feed, too, by the way, we ran the plug for it. I mentioned it. The VIP audio feed is available on iTunes and all popular podcast or tons of podcast apps available on Android and iPhone also. People ask that all the time. And yes, we do have an RSS feed. That works. You just have to authenticate it, and we walk you through how to do it. It's very easy. Jim, as far as splitting up feuds, I wonder, like, Sami Zayn and Kevin Owens, like, last night, super, super intense brawl, and they're like, will they ever stop fighting? I think they're kind of setting up the idea of, yeah, they fight at Battleground, but then they get split up. And I think part of selling the roster split, Jim, is going to be there's some rivalries fierce rivalries that will be split up, and they will only come together when there's a trade or some sort of brand versus brand matchup, and they'll kind of sell that as an attraction down the line that's being withheld from you. But they don't want to split up all the money feuds during the roster split. You know, they've got to keep some people on the same brand who people want to pay to see fight each other. That's going to be an interesting dynamic to see play out.
Yeah, I think there has been speculation as far as, is Cena going to be the face of the SmackDown brand? Is AJ going to be the world champion? Is, you know, Roman Reigns or Seth or now Dean Ambrose going to be the world champion of Raw? I think there's been some speculation, but I got to say, with this new Shield dynamic, it's caused me to kind of question who's going where, which I would like to think is part of their plan and part of their storytelling, as opposed to they're just pulling stuff out of their hind ends.
Yeah, I've tried not to overthink the roster split and where everybody would end up too early. I kind of think John Cena will end up on SmackDown, because I think USA Network wants to see a show of good faith by WWE that they're taking this push for SmackDown going live seriously. But is everything else, I think, is totally up in the air. I could see Roman Reigns ending up on SmackDown also, and they just load up Raw with everybody else. I can see a lot of different scenarios. I think they will have a couple feuds that they feel have played themselves out a bit, and they'll split them up. But I think it'll be good for, say, Seth and Roman Reigns. You know, here's my thing. The matches that you're seeing given away on TV might be the ones where you can take that as a hint that they end up on separate brands. So I could see Seth and Roman ending up on separate rosters, and I could see Kevin Owens and Sami Zayn ending up on separate rosters, with the idea being 2 years down the line, if they're kept apart, it's a money match again. But they're going to use it up now. They're going to get everything they can out of it before splitting them up. So when you start seeing a lot of matchups between top guys over the next couple weeks, that might be a hint that they're going to be separated, because they don't feel that they're saving them. In fact, they're going to have them split apart. So, I mean, July is going to be one of the biggest months we've had in a long time. I talked about UFC and MMA being big, pro wrestling too. So much going on, including Brock Lesnar and UFC with that crossover. But this roster split changes a lot. SmackDown going live changes a lot. I'm really curious to see how this all plays out. We talked earlier about Fan Essentials. We've got another sponsor on this program who has been with us all year, and we've gotten great feedback from people who subscribe to Loot Crate. Loot Crate is a monthly subscription box service for epic geek and gamer items and pop culture gear. For less than $20 a month, you get 6 to 8 items that include licensed gear, apparel, collectibles, unique one-of-a-kind items, and more. Make sure to head over to lootcrate.com and enter coupon code PWTORCH to save $3 on any new subscription. Loot Crate, it's like a friend who knows what you love and surprises you with an awesome present every month. They also ship to 27 countries with more info on their site. So it's not just a U.S. or Canada thing. No matter where you're listening to us, there's a good likelihood you're included on their sign-up page. Loot Crate is more than a subscription service. It's an entire community of fans who share their experience and interact with each other around the unboxing of each month's crate. Loot Crate, by the way, guarantees $40-plus dollars in retail value in every crate. So you're paying less than half that. Plus, you get $3 more off when you sign up using coupon code PWTORCH. And sometimes it's a lot more than $40 in retail value. Every month, there's a different theme. All items are curated around that theme. Themes are inspired by major movie and video game releases, as well as pulling from pop culture franchises such as Star Wars, The Walking Dead, The Legend of Zelda, Marvel, and many more. Head over to lootcrate.com right now, lootcrate.com, and enter coupon code PWTORCH to save $3 on any new subscription. All right, we're back. I'm Wade Keller on Tuesday's edition of the Livecast and joined by Jim Valley of Total Chaos Radio from the Attitude Era and now the Way Back Playback VIP show on Sundays and his PW Torch Livecast on Saturday mornings called Saturday Morning Wrestling with George South from the Crockett World Championship Wrestling Saturday 605 era joining him coming up this Saturday morning. So hope you'll join him live and participate in that call, especially if you have fond memories of that era or curiosities about that era. Let's go back to the phone lines here as we are running over the 1 hour mark, but we'll take some more calls and we'll go next to area code 703. 703, please state your name and where you're calling from.
Hey, Wade and Jim. I'm Joe. I'm a VIP member. I'm calling from Manassas, Virginia.
Great. Good to hear from you, Joe. Thanks for calling. What have you got for Jim and me?
Hey, I've got some two topics. They're kind of off the main discussion format. There's maybe minor things, but one, and Wade, I sent you, hopefully you had time to watch it, that video of Natalya. I sent you a video of Natalya from the match on Sunday night, where she was, she basically hit a force field trying to make a tag to Becky Lynch, and just she crawled halfway across the ring and just flopped for probably 5 seconds until Charlotte could come in, finish the spot, and then she immediately tagged right back out to Becky. I just wanted to know if either of you guys cared about that or picked up on that. I thought it was incredibly rookie-ish of the supposed veteran of the Divas, or I mean, sorry, the women's division. And it's not the first time she's made, you know, boneheaded moves in the ring like that before. I just was wondering what you thought of that. And the second thing I'll ask, and then I'll listen, I've been thinking, you know, Neville and Apollo Crews, they're very athletic, fun to watch in the ring, but they have kind of no personalities, it seems like, in WWE. They've had this problem. I was wondering what you thought of the idea of when Neville comes back, putting those two in a tag team, kind of be like a newer style British Bulldogs, where they're both muscular guys that can do really flashy moves. It would at least give them some time to kind of develop a personality without just being even Steven Midcarters. I just wanted to know what you guys thought about those things. Thanks.
Cool. Yeah, cool, Joe. Thanks. Appreciate the topic. Yeah, we certainly encourage callers to go off the main beaten path talking about roster split, Roman Reigns, The Shield, John Cena, AJ Styles, and those are two good topics. I did not get to open – I couldn't open your file. It opened as an audio file on my laptop and would not open on my phone, so I didn't get to see the snippet you sent me on Natalya, but and I didn't notice. So, Jim, did you notice the force field botch by Natalya? I did a third time. I'm finding myself. Go ahead, Jim.
It's okay. You know, she may have been, you know, biding time for for Charlotte or whoever was supposed to cut her off. I mean, it's not necessarily Natalya's fault, but yeah,
right.
I saw that and I saw some people talking about it. It's been a topic of conversation on Twitter and on Reddit, some other places that I've seen. I think that it was just one of those moments. I think that, you know, she knew what was supposed to happen in the match and she was trying to make time, but yeah, it looked pretty ridiculous for sure. But
yeah, it's not always the fault of the wrestler who ends up looking bad. Sometimes it's the person
yeah.
who's not where they're supposed to be. I think that happened with, Gallows on Sunday in the tag match where he was, I wrote it up in my report. I'm forgetting exactly who it was, but I think on Sunday night we had another situation where the ref had to start the count slow and Carl Anderson had to kick out of a move where Gallows was actually supposed to yank whoever was going for the cover. I don't remember if it was Enzo or who, but I mean, that stuff happens, you know, it's pro wrestling. I try not to be too hard on a botch here and there, as long as it's not part of a larger pattern or negligence or somebody, you know, showing up in no condition to work. If it's just bad timing, I'm not a fan of chanting "you effed up" at wrestlers who screw up, because there's going to be screw ups. I mean, it happens. I don't want someone sitting here while I'm doing the live cast chanting "you effed up" when I don't turn on Jim's microphone after a commercial break. You know, mistakes happen. We're human. You want them to be minimal. You hope they don't happen more often to one wrestler than somebody else, or that might indicate something's up with them. But they got so much going on, so much on their mind, so much pressure. I just don't think that it's cool to be too picky about it. But that said, your goal should be to not let that stuff happen. But I'm not ready to blame Natalya for that. As for Apollo Crews and Neville, at first I thought, oh yeah, take two people with no personality and put them together so you have a no personality tag team. And I was like, eh. And then 2 seconds later, I kind of liked the idea. Because I do think that Neville does have a personality deficit. I mean, he's not this dynamic personality, but he's so dynamic in the ring. Apollo Crews has a nice smile. He's very likable. I think NXT knew how to promote that and feature it. But there is something there that still needs to be figured out. And sometimes being in a tag team, you know, playing for hot tags, showing fire when you get the hot tag, working sympathy, there's things about being a tag wrestler that actually I think would work really well for Apollo Crews right now. And I think Neville might be better off in a tag team situation than singles because of his size. I think he can be higher on the card as part of a dynamic over tag team instead of just a spot guy on the undercard. So, yeah, I mean, I actually kind of like that idea, and I'm just a fan of tag wrestling in general, and I think putting two people together like that sometimes is what the tag division is good for, taking two guys who have some deficits, you put them together, and now it's a dynamic tag team. And the British Bulldog analogy or comparison I would not have come up with, but it makes sense. You know, Apollo Crews is Davey Boy, and Neville is more Dynamite Kid. I kind of like it. How about you, Jim?
I went through the same thought process that you did. Yeah, I think it makes a lot of sense. I feel bad for Apollo Crews. I think there might be something there, but you know, I think he needs to find his comfort level and he hasn't really, really found that yet. And also, you know, what does he stand for? Who is he? What is he about? Is he just Mr. Happy Guy that has a great body? Is that his deal? It's like, he doesn't really have an identity yet. And I'm wondering, you know, they were supposed to wait on people until they had a plan and a purpose to bring them up. And a lot of times we have not seen that with some of the NXT generation. So, yeah, I think that those are two guys who are floundering. And, yeah, I think it's a good idea for them.
All right, let's go to an email question. Nelson from Bronx, New York, a Torch VIP member since December 2013, says, do you think Vince McMahon is finally going to have Roman go full heel now that he's not the champion anymore? Last night on Raw, he was telling fans to shut up and go drink their beer. Could Roman go in the same direction as when Bret Hart went heel in 97, when he kept getting screwed out of the title and was always whining and complaining? Number two, do you think WWE's making the club into a joke? I don't find them to be serious or a threat like when the NWO first appeared in WCW. The club could be destroying factions like the New Day, the Wyatts, the Usos, and Roman. I think they're missing the boat with them. They could have a 1 year of destruction being unbeatable until they meet up with John Cena and the American Alphas. What's your opinion? Thank you guys. I love what you do. Wade, I love your, he says, Wade. Oh, I'm getting my comments screwed up here. I love what you do, Wade. And Jim, I love your Saturday morning shows and Wayback Playbacks with Pat McNeil. Have a great day, everyone. Go VIP. It's worth every single penny. Trust me. Yes. Trust Nelson from Bronx, New York. Going VIP is worth every penny. PWTorch.com/go VIP. Jim, I want to take the club one first, and then we'll talk about Roman again. Yes, I think Anderson and Gallows have essentially become like Jamie Noble, what Jamie Noble was to Seth Rollins. The way that Carl Anderson was treated last night against Cena, losing to the attitude adjustment a couple minutes into a fight that he was dominated in. I mean, they've totally marginalized them. The club is not going to be a serious faction. Vince is into AJ, and he sees the club the way he saw Jamie and Joey as just two sidekicks who are interfering on his behalf. And I do think that they are getting less out of the club than they could have. And I think people probably need to resign themselves to that. And, yeah, have a sip of their beer and get over it, like Roman said. No, I don't mean that. Jim, your thoughts?
I agree with you. They're set up guys, and that's too bad. I mean, you think about before they came to the WWE, you know, Carl Anderson was making a couple of appearances in Ring of Honor, and, you know, he was sort of a hot up-and-coming star. And now he stooges for John Cena. And John Cena's a big star, and Carl Anderson is not, so there's – he should be, I'm not saying he should beat John Cena, but he certainly should be more competitive and more impressive. But, Carl Anderson, I didn't realize, I guess maybe we were talking about size earlier with AJ and Stone Cold in the podcast, but, you know, he's much smaller than I'd realized, because I guess it was more hidden with the roster in New Japan and Ring of Honor. But yeah, what a difference a change of scenery makes. I think a lot of people are anticipating the appearance of Finn Balor, and maybe that'll be something that changes the dynamic and changes the way they're pushed. But I'm not convinced anymore that that's going to be the case.
I'm not even sure I want Finn Balor in the club right now. I don't think the club's been treated serious enough, and I think he should aspire for a higher push than being somebody who fans who don't know him are going to wonder, oh, is this another Carl Anderson guy who's going to lose in 2 minutes to Cena? As far as Roman Reigns whining and complaining, I mean, I think that could work. I mean, I think we saw a glimpse into how that was one of the most genuine, believable moments in Roman Reigns since he was in the Shield. And maybe the entire time we've seen him as a public figure was when he told the fans told the fans off, essentially the ones who were booing him. He felt comfortable. I already praised that segment. Jim, I think that's a window into how Roman can be cast the best. No matter how fans react to that character, I think you want to cast people in a way that seems genuine and fits their personality, and I think that does.
You think he's a whiner? I don't see him as a whiner. He seems like
a guy telling off fans more so, and acting entitled. Maybe whining's not the word, because I don't think a direct comparison to Bret Hart works, but a guy who it has that sense of self-entitlement, you know, like, how can you boo me? Look at me. I every one of you, all your girlfriends, all your wives want me. If you could, you would be like me, and you boo me because you're jealous, that kind of thing. And the whole system is against me because I'm clearly the best wrestler. And anytime I don't have the title, it's because the system cheated me, you know, that kind of thing, that sense of self-entitlement of being better than everybody else.
Yeah. Maybe there's an aspect. I kind of see him more as, you know, more like a smug, confident Kevin Nash without the humor. That's kind of the way I think that Joe Anoa'i is. But, and I'd like to see him, you know, just be himself. And I think either he could get over as a babyface or a heel. It seems like whoever is writing for him is just missing the boat on some natural personality traits that I think that are there.
All right, let's go to area code 210. You're up next. Please state your name and where you're calling from.
Hey, it's James in San Antonio.
Hey, James, thanks for calling. What do you got for Jim and me?
Hey, yeah. I want to just talk about the Wyatts real quick and their return. I don't know if y'all covered it yet.
No, we haven't.
Turn you guys on. Okay. I was excited to see him. I'm always excited to see Bray, even though they haven't treated him the right way. But I'm not excited to see him against the New Day. I don't understand why they wouldn't bring him back as a baby. You know, right before he left and got hurt, he was, that night on Raw, he was teaming with Roman. He was getting cheered. I mean, he was getting major cheers all throughout the building. And you could see there was a lot of babyface potential there with him. I don't see why they have to take the whole Wyatt group and put them against New Day. I'd rather see Bray in a one-on-one feud, potentially maybe against Rusev, maybe for a U.S. title, maybe against Miz. Those would be two different personalities going at each other. Maybe even it's Jericho, and you know, maybe he gets a rub off Jericho, you know, to make him look a little bit better, because, you know, obviously his character needs to be built up. I just want to see what you guys think about all that.
I like all of your ideas, James, better than what they did. I do not understand at all, Jim, what they did last night with the Wyatt family and New Day. Fans generally love New Day. I believe they were trying to position the Wyatts as babyfaces before Bray's injury, and I'm not sure what they were doing last night, but it felt like a babyface push. In some respects, I was waiting for that to be solidified. And then New Day come out in this weird clash of personalities, and I feel like this is one of those situations that I completely disagree with when people espouse this, which is just throw characters out there and let the fans respond how they want. And as long as people care about the characters, who cares if they cheer or boo them? Just have the fans be engaged watching them clash. That's not where we are with New Day in the Wyatts yet. It's not some a dream situation of two factions, and oh my God, it would be so fun to see them interact. The Wyatts should have come back and been defined clearly. Fans should have been given a reason to either cheer or boo them based on the way the Wyatts presented themselves and who they were opposite of and how they interacted. And I have no idea anymore how I'm supposed to feel about New Day, and even less so about the Wyatt family. I thought that was a terrible judgment, and I like James's suggestions much better. How about you, Jim?
Yeah, I agree with you. James's stuff were all very good ideas that I think would be more compelling. Let me add, I agree with everything you said, and let me add that the whole thing with Xavier Woods and that trance, I was like, well, this is some Papa Shango crap right here. I don't want to see that. I was like, what is with this trance garbage? I was just like, oh my gosh, yeah. Is he going to start puking green vomit like the Ultimate Warrior? Or what's his green goo going to come out of his forehead like Ultimate Warrior? What is this crap? But on top of that, I think that New Day is missing something. They have gotten into no feuds. It's like they've gotten by almost completely on squash matches and their interviews, and I feel like they're running out of steam until they get some sort of feud where they can be clever on the mic and angry like Stone Cold was, or Rock. You know, that's what made Rock so great, is that he could be funny, sure, but when it came time to lay the smack down, he was really good at that. I want to see the New Day be good at trash talking as they are entertaining with all the comedy and the unicorns and the breakfast cereal. So if that would give them this opportunity, then maybe, but I agree with you. I'm not sure that the Wyatt family are the right people to bring that out in New Day.
I am. We started an hour early because I've got a commitment I've got to get to. So I'm rapidly running out of time here, nearly an hour and a half into the program, but I want to take at least one more email here before wrapping up. Sheamus says, was it just me or was the booking of the Rollins-Reigns match at Money in the Bank very strange? Rollins was like the underdog babyface coming back from an injury, and Reigns was booked as the big powerhouse bully heel. Despite him losing, it was very one-sided toward Reigns, which surprises me as I was expecting a similar dynamic in the AJ Cena match that it had, with Rollins one step ahead most of the match and using his speed as an advantage. Even with the Rollins-Cena match from SummerSlam last year, that was very back and forth. Why was the match booked that the way it was, and do you think it led to a ceiling on the quality of the match? I don't even recall any "this was awesome" chance. Well, I don't know that that's a bad thing. I feel if it had been booked more back and forth, it could have rivaled Roman's matches with AJ Styles. If they had any sense, they should have had Rollins come back as a face and have a face Rollins versus a tweener Reigns. Then we could have had a match to rival Reigns-Styles. P.S. Really looking forward to you putting up the Eric Bischoff interviews on the RSS feed. Yes, that'll be going up hopefully this week. My 2009 multi-hour, 3-4 hour interview with Eric Bischoff, the most in-depth interview I believe he's ever done, going into the rise of WCW Nitro and the fall of WCW and his time in WWE. Great interview with Eric, and that'll be going up on the RSS feed sort of as an accompaniment to, and perhaps a long-form augmentation of the DVD that is coming out, or is out, that Todd Martin recently reviewed. And by the way, that'll be on the VIP feed for VIP members. The dynamic, it plays into what I'm saying, Jim. I think that you want to have wrestlers cast in a way that coincides with their ring style and how fans will react to them or are already reacting to them. And it did seem like things were off, especially with Seth and Roman on Sunday. I thought it just, I was watching the match, and if you turn off the announcing and the context and you just listen and watch, it really felt like anybody who had been away from wrestling for 8 years and just started watching without the announcing would go, oh, Seth Rollins is the new Shawn Michaels. He's your lead babyface, and Roman Reigns is this big D-bag heel who everyone's cheering to lose, cheering that you're rooting against. That's how that match played out the vast majority of the time. And I think Sheamus is right. And I don't get I think they are running into a headwind when it comes to trying to book Seth as a heel. As good as he is as a heel, I think it's a more natural babyface. And Roman clearly should be a heel, and I think it came through Sunday night in that match. Jim?
Yeah, I think you're exactly right on that. I'm sorry, I didn't know that was – that just seems so common sense. I didn't know that needed an answer.
Yeah.
No, you're 100% right on that. So, yeah.
Well, here, let me throw another question because I think we did cover that a lot, and you certainly gave your views on that. Daryl says, hey, Wade and Jim, after last night's – WWE sold me on two things. First, the top of the card is jokey and the title doesn't seem how it should. With Dean not feeling like a non-serious guy and more like a jokester, Roman feels like a guy who read off a paper and Seth feels misplaced. So overall, the main event scene seems very weak. Second, is a brand split already a failure as they're trying to use the term draft to build up interest in a brand split, which seems like a one-show pop because they don't have six over guys who can lead to the shows and draw interest. This first one's more of a comment. I do think they need to rearrange things to get people to take that top scene and the Shield seriously. We've certainly covered that. But as far as the roster split, I definitely don't think it's a failure. I don't think anything that they've done can make it a success or failure at this point, other than they've been building it up as a big deal. There's going to be big anticipation for July 19th, the live SmackDown. I think it's going to pop a rating, but it's all about follow-up, Jim. And it's all about not creating a false sense that there's some competition between Raw and SmackDown. I was a little worried about the wording in the media yesterday in that some headlines were like, WWE is going to have competition between Raw and SmackDown. No, they're not. They're dividing up teams, but those teams are going to fight each other internally, not opposite of each other. This is not the Cavs against Golden State. This is USC and Strikeforce. This is WCW and WWF. This is two groups of fighters who are going to fight within their own groups. That's not competition between Raw and SmackDown. We're not going to have a weekly report about how SmackDown did in the ratings compared to Raw. They're not going to fight each other every week. It's the opposite of competition between Raw and SmackDown. They're actually cutting off competition between half the roster and half the roster. And the problem that WWE has is trying to frame what sounds like a negative as a positive. And I think the best way to do that is to just do the draft and present two shows that are better than they were before, because you have a wider array of talent coming in from NXT and underutilized talent. And you have talent not being overexposed twice a week, but instead you only get to see Kevin Owens once a week. You only get to see John Cena once a week. So there's less overexposure. That's inherently good. And over time, you're going to have matchups you want to see that you can't see that'll eventually happen because of a draft or an intra-brand pay-per-view. But none of this is stuff that's easily explained. So I have mixed feelings about the notion of building up the draft as some sort of Raw versus SmackDown competition, and I think that'll be a problem. How do you think they're doing so far?
They're not in competition with each other. They're in competition with the WWE is in competition with other entities in entertainment and for your time. You know, they already tried to do the competition thing, and does anybody really care? Do you identify with Raw versus SmackDown, or are you a SmackDown guy versus Raw? No, no one, no fan is. That's a ridiculous task to take. You know, WWE is in competition with WWE to put on two great shows that will compel you to spend your Tuesday night watching Raw as opposed to, you know, whatever else, what other options you have. That's the competition. You know, as far as, you know, they used to do the bragging rights pay-per-view and no one watched it because no one saw it that way. And I think to go down that path again is a rabbit hole where you just don't want to go. The competition is to put on the best show you can Monday night and the best show you can Tuesday night to garner more ratings, to make USA Network happy, to make more television, you know, money. So that's the game. The game is not Raw versus SmackDown. The game is the best WWE product to gain the most fans on both nights.
And the framing of it is where WWE runs into challenges, because Vince McMahon isn't a sports fan. Kevin Dunn is because he watches Monday Night Football during Raw, apparently. That's what I've heard from multiple people. But Triple H isn't a sports guy. A lot of the writers aren't sports people. They don't understand. You don't do a draft to split a roster in half and then talk about competition between Raw and SmackDown. This isn't Raw versus Nitro, and it's not the cover story of Pro Wrestling Torch talking about the ratings battle. That's not what's going to matter. What's going to matter is who fights whom on SmackDown and getting people to care about that, and who fights whom on Raw and getting people to care about that. Nobody's going to care about – we will here on the show. We'll talk about the growth of the SmackDown ratings and what's happening in that sense in terms of who draws – you know, better at house shows, the SmackDown crew or the Raw crew and all that. But from a viewership standpoint, the 2, 3, 4 million people they want to be watching the shows, they got to get them to care about the feuds between the wrestlers who are SmackDown exclusive and the feuds between wrestlers who are Raw exclusive. But it's hard to explain to fans, hey, we got something really exciting happening. You're going to have to watch twice a week to see your favorite stars because you used to be able to watch one show or the other and see everybody. They can't say that, but that's what's happening. Now, it's on a more subtle level good because you're not going to overexpose the talent that was overexposed. You're not going to have watered down storylines because you got the same top storylines on two shows per week, which is too much. 3 hours is too much, but five is even worse. So structurally, institutionally, this is going to make the booking better if they do the obvious things right. And they should do the obvious things right. They didn't last time. For the majority of the last roster split, they got off path and Raw became dominant as SmackDown lost good time slots and good stations. But this should be a good thing if they do it right. There's the talent depth in the world to do it, but they got to bring the right talent in from NXT. They got to keep refreshing the roster, but it's hard to explain all this. But they can't frame it as Raw versus SmackDown. And that's the challenge they have. And that's why in a way I'm just kind of looking forward to July 20th when we're past the draft and we can just get back to promoting two good shows that in within themselves are good shows with wrestlers people want to see once a week, as opposed to a bunch of overexposed talent who are on twice a week, and get past trying to hype it and frame it as a positive in a way that's just too abstract to really resonate with the fan base. All right, one more question for you, Jim, then I got to go. This comes from Skate. He says, I was thinking of the person who Brock should face at SummerSlam, and I couldn't think of anyone else who might make sense other than John Cena. With Brock coming off his win or loss against Mark Hunt at UFC 200 and Cena fresh from hosting the ESPYs in a few weeks, I think it'd be perfect for WWE to gain more mainstream attention for their second biggest pay-per-view of the year. But if not Cena, who else? I know there's money in Roman Brock 2 later down the road, but I feel the time is perfect for Cena Brock 3. I appreciate everything you do. Thanks, guys. Jim, who's on your list of Brock opponents at this point? And if he loses at UFC, part two of the question is, does that hurt Brock quite a bit in terms of drawing power at SummerSlam?
I think that, to me, the most obvious person to put him against is Ambrose with the world title on the line, because if Brock loses, then Ambrose gets his win back and defends his title against Brock. And if Brock loses, then he's not valuable and he can be fed to somebody like Ambrose, where he's already, you know, had Undertaker and Cena and Triple H and all those guys. He seems like an obvious one just based on their most recent past and the world title. But after that was my thought. If you would have asked me at the end of Sunday night what was going to happen, that was my thought. But after Monday, I'm not so sure anymore.
All right. Jim, thank you so much. This hour and a half just flew by. So much going on in wrestling. We left some callers on hold. We definitely left some emails in the inbox. I'll try to tackle some of them on the Wade Keller Hotline for VIP members in the Ask the Editor segment later this week. Jim, you got George South scheduled for Saturday. I encourage people to check that out. You can subscribe to the PW Torch Livecast on all popular podcast apps and iTunes, and you can hear Jim Valley not only live on Saturday mornings, but as a VIP member with Pat McNeil with the Wayback Playback every Sunday, reviewing in real time an hour of an old wrestling event on WWE Network or DVD or otherwise, and the Total Chaos Radio Show, which we put up on a semi-regular basis from the Attitude Era, a really cool perk for VIP members. Jim, how do people follow you on Twitter? Do you want people to follow you on Twitter?
Of course I do, at Jim Valley, J-I-M-V-A-L-L-E-Y. And yeah, and speaking of chaos, I got an email from, I got a tweet from a Torch VIP member who said how much he enjoyed the shows. And, you know, they're just getting good now. We're just at the beginning of the run for Total Chaos, and things are going to, business is about to pick up as far as those go. There should be some more, I'll upload some more to you in the very near future, Wade.
It's excellent. I look forward to them every time you send them. And we thank all our listeners. And, yeah, what a great we're about to enter, I think, a great 30-day period here from June 21st through the fallout from the draft. I think Wednesday's live casts are going to take on new meaning now, the day after SmackDown. That's going to add, I think, a little bit of extra excitement for the Pat McNeil-hosted shows, too, following a live edition of SmackDown. So a lot of fun stuff coming up. Battleground, SummerSlam, USC 200. Stay with us and go VIP, pwtorch.com/goVIP. If you're a fan of USC and MMA, and there's a lot going on right now, check out MMATorch.com. And, of course, PWTorch.com is the main pro wrestling site. It is free, packed with information. And but we do hope you'll go VIP and show support for what we do here by getting in exchange. You get a lot of bang for your buck. And follow me on Twitter, at TheWadeKeller, and follow our brand, at PWTorch. And don't forget, when shopping Amazon, go to PWTorch.com/Amazon. That's pwtorch.com/Amazon. And that's a way of showing support for us. You just end up at Amazon's homepage, and everything you buy on that trip, we get a cut of whatever you buy. And that's a great way to show support for us. That does it for me. Until next time, Wade Keller, signing off.